The Association of Classical and Christian Schools presents Repairing the Ruins, the 2016 ACCS Annual Conference, copyright 2016. You may make additional copies of this recording for use by your school, but please do not sell any copies of the recording. Learn more about classical Christian education and the ACCS at accsedu.org.
Well, welcome. Thank you for being here. Super loud, sorry. I guess it's time to get started. So thank you for coming. There are so many awesome workshops here yesterday and today. I'm a second grade teacher, so I would have loved to be at the one about teaching reading effectively because that is my area of study. But I appreciate you coming and being here today so that we can work on our interpersonal relationships together. So let's begin with a word of prayer. Father, I thank you so much for this time. Thank you for these teachers, these administrators, these friends that are here today, Lord, to learn. Thank you for giving us this opportunity. We just pray that that the things that we say and the things that we hear would be pleasing to you and that it would be to your glory. And it's in your precious name that I ask these things. Amen. Okay, so introductions first. My name is Jenny Wilford, and I am a second grade teacher at the Ambrose School. I will be beginning my sixth year as a second grade teacher, but I've been a proponent of classical education for many years. I have four children. My husband and I have four, and our three daughters have all gone K through 12 through the Ambrose School, and have recently my youngest daughter just graduated from Seattle Pacific University just this month. So the other two have graduated from Christian colleges as well. So my son is going to be a senior in high school, and so we've been around a long time. So we were adding it up, and I think we've actually been with the school since 1996. So we're just about at our 20-year anniversary. So we're just thrilled. We've loved classical education, and I've been thrilled to be on board and on staff now for a little while. So I just want to say that I love teaching second grade, and when I was hired, I was initially thinking that I might want to be teaching older students, those that I could maybe have a different kind of relationship with and kind of have the back and forth and those harder questions. But then when I ended up in second grade, I realized that it was just such a blessing to be with 7 and 8-year-olds all day. I mean, I'm not saying I'm not tired by the end of the day. But it is a privilege and just a joy to be working with 7 and 8-year-olds because they do, they thrill your heart with their earnestness and their willingness to do whatever you ask them to do. And they haven't quite gotten to the point where they have an attitude yet, and that's kind of nice. So they are very earnest, and they are very truthful. And I did want to just show you a few of them. So these are some of my precious second graders. This was Ancient Egypt Day. So in our school, we do have a special day dedicated to Ancient Egypt. We focus on, we do Old Testament history and Ancient Egypt as our history study in second grade. And so on Ancient Egypt Day, they come in full costume, as do I. And we have an Egyptian feast, and we do Egyptian math, and we continue studying about hieroglyphs. We play Senet. We focus on King Tut, and it's just a joyful day. It's the pinnacle of second grade. So if you're ever near Meridian, Idaho, in April, check and see when Egyptian Day is because it's a fun day to come in and watch. So, of course, they are very truthful and very honest, and I wanted to just, as we talk about communication, I wanted to just give you a brief look at some of the things that they say. And I know as teachers, and if you're a grammar school teacher, you've heard a lot of these things as well, but they're, again, just honest and truthful. So I just wanted to give you a few of these. I can't go to the basketball game. My parents say we have other plans. That could mean something fun, or it could mean going to the grocery store. Today's book report is about a basilisk. You're studying reptiles then. And this was actually a prayer request. Please pray for my eyes because they got violated at the doctor's yesterday. And a few more. We were studying about courage. We were studying about Joshua. And I had them write a little essay on why and when they needed courage. R2-D2 had lots of courage. Kindergarten, you need lots of courage then. Eating something that looks weird. At a garage sale, I have no idea, but I guess maybe they needed courage then. And that sounds like a second grader. Just trying to make it sound very exciting. And then on a recent spelling test, you need not to forget about the bones weird, or of course, in other words, the bonus word. And the bonus word that day was buttermilk, and she got it right. But I just loved her spelling on that. So much fun. And then the prayer requests, and I know you've heard these as well. They just run the gamut. They can range from very innocent, simple things to some serious things. So here's just a few. Lord, please help my dog not to get into the pantry and eat the Cheetos again. Dear Jesus, please help my lizard not go into the refrigerator again, because my mom gets really upset and it's really hard to get him out. And Lord, please help my mom clean the house today. She's really stressed about that. And we hear things like that, where children just have hearts for their parents and their families and wanting to share those with you. And the more serious ones. Recently, Planned Parenthood was opened up in Meridian, and a little boy came in one day and had a request to help all the babies that were being killed in Meridian. And, of course, this caused an uproar in the class, and I had to quickly mitigate that and then later talk to his parents about appropriate requests and comments in the classroom. This is a family that was very open and shared everything and didn't hold anything back. But again, having those conversations with parents about things that go on in the classroom are important. And so all of this leading up to, without a doubt, communication is of utmost importance when you're working with children and parents. So what is communication? Well, it's the imparting or exchange of information, of ideas, of feelings. It's something that we do every day, consciously and unconsciously, sending those little signals that give away our hearts and our attitudes. We communicate with our voices. We communicate with our facial expressions. We communicate with our gestures, with our, of course, our emails and our texts and our tweets. We communicate on a superficial level. Oh, hey, how you doing? And right on down the hall. But also on a deeper level. Can I talk to you? I've got a problem. Communication is taking place even as I talk to you, as you are possibly perceiving how uncomfortable I am in talking to a large group instead of a 23 second graders, and how maybe you can hear my heart pounding. Communication, though, is the foundation of how we relate to each other. If we couldn't communicate, we would be lost in a disconnected world. God, at the heart of his very being, longs to communicate with us. He sent his Son as the ultimate communication of his love for us, and he waits patiently for us to understand, love, and receive and accept him so that we may have a relationship with him. I've heard David Goodwin recently talk about how God communicates to us through his word, through poetry, through visuals like a vibrant sunset and a brilliant night sky. Communication is vital to how we live well in community. Communication is fundamental and critical. Studies have shown that emperor penguins like these communicate with each other by using different frequencies and tone at the same time, as well as thousands of different types of calls in order to be able to find each other amidst the cacophony of the large penguin communities that they live with. And of course, that's important as they build their nests and care for their young and live with each other. Mothers are able to distinguish their newborn baby's cries and odors from that of other newborns. They differentiate between different chortles, coos, and wails to understanding cries of hunger, pain, and crankiness. Those of you that are moms know what I'm talking about. They can communicate nonverbally using facial expressions, hand gestures, and touch. Babies intimately know their mother's voice and respond to it, sometimes exclusively. When a newborn becomes overwhelmed with stimuli, it will automatically disengage by turning its face away, crying, not making eye contact, or even falling asleep. Knowing a baby's nonverbal cues are tantamount to forming a maternal bond. So it's clear that communication is important. As teachers and administrators, we know how important it is to have clear as well as effective communication with each other, with our staff, and with our students. But how does this translate in the area of communication between parents and teachers? So we're going to look at three areas of potential community and conflict. You have those on your outline. We're going to look at cohesiveness. We're going to look at clear communication, which I'm also calling clarity, and conferences. So let's start with cohesiveness. How do we use cohesiveness to create community in the classroom? How can communication between parents and teachers be improved by cohesiveness? Well, the word literally means to cause cohesion, close proximity, to stick, to be integrated, to be unified. If you're cohesive, that means that you're not getting very far away from each other. Proximity means that you're going to need to learn to get along, respect each other, and work together instead of the opposite, being at cross purposes. Teachers can set a standard of cohesiveness by employing techniques such as clarity, and we're going to talk more about that on the next slide. But making sure that you're very clear about your expectations, your goals, your rules and regulations in your classroom, general classroom information. So at the Ambrose School, we try hard to do that by, in the K-3 classrooms, we have a parent-teacher orientation day. So that's actually the first day of school. So when the kids come on the first day, they're in uniform, they're ready to go, but it's really just sort of even less than a half day because we spend that whole day, about two and a half hours, talking about the rules, the regulations, the goals, the expectations, so that parents are, we're very clear with them in what's to be expected. And we ask for just one parent to come for each child, and it usually works really well, and sometimes we'll get the whole family coming in with grandparents, and they're very excited, and it all works out well. But we give them that ahead of time. And I actually, a couple of years ago, started putting it in a real, you know, brightly colored folder and putting their name on it and getting it all together so that when in the middle of the year I send home an email and say, don't forget to look for the Gold Sheet guidelines for the literature questions. And you know, somebody will reply back, what are Gold Sheet guidelines? And I'll say, remember, they're in that folder that I gave you on the first day. And I remind them to put it in a safe spot and so that they've got it there. And you know, as teachers, we need to kind of give those gentle reminders all year long about different things. But if you kind of set them up at the beginning by giving them up front what they need, what they're going to need throughout the year, it's a helpful thing. So we We have that orientation day. It encourages cooperation together. We do that as well by giving them opportunities to help. So very early in the year, in fact, at our school, we have a back-to-school picnic the week before school starts. We actually have passed around a clipboard that has opportunities for them to come in and help in second grade. And we have things like recess duty and help with grading and help with cleaning the classroom, help with field trips or being the photography mom or dad. We give them way more options than they probably need. And, of course, I always put the important things first. For me, it would be recess just because you know that you don't get much of a break during the day when you're teaching grammar school, and having somebody taking your class out to recess for 20 minutes can be a huge help. So we give them that opportunity, and we don't force it upon them. We just kind of say, hey, here's the clipboard, you know, if you want to sign up. And then if you don't have a lot of signups, send out that email, you know, in early days and say, you know, we have an opportunity for Tuesday at 10:20 if somebody is willing to come in and take that recess on a weekly basis. And that seems to work well. We inculcate, so that's the next thing. And loco parentis, that's that Latin phrase that means in the stead of the parents. We talk about that a lot at Ambrose, and at least among the staff. But what we're trying to do with parents is give them a heads up that we know and appreciate what they are doing at home, and we are trying to support that by doing what we do at school. So we do it at school at Ambrose between 7:30 and 2:30 in the grammar school. Parents then take over and continue doing, hopefully supporting what we're doing at home. So we couch it as a team. Things, and I think I had said that in the little early information about this workshop, that really things work best when we're on the same page, when we're working as a team. You all know as educators that you can pretty much deal with any child or any discipline problem, but if the parents are not on board, if the parents are not your support team, that is going to be very difficult. So it's important to sort of get them on board early and help them understand not only that the mission of the school, the vision of the school, the philosophy of the school, but also what you're trying to do in the classroom and what your expectations are and what the discipline measures will be. Make sure that they know if you start with a name on the board for first offense and then a check mark after that for a second, and when is it the time to head down to the principal's office so there aren't any surprises and they're not calling you or emailing you later saying, what happened? You know, and there's, you know, we want them to be aware early on. Okay, so training them in the same way that we're training their children in the classroom. So then next, be available. And I'll talk more about availability as we come up to the next slide, but be accessible. And that doesn't mean to excess. I think I will talk about emailing is a real great way to communicate. It covers everyone usually, and we'll talk about that too. I give my classroom phone number out on the very first day of school and my email. If parents would like my cell phone number, I will sometimes give that to them, and I'll talk about information or situations where that might be applicable. But there are lots of ways to be available, and we'll talk about that soon. But that's part of starting that cohesiveness and making that work. So then participation, giving parents an opportunity. So that beginning time when they are able to sign up for volunteering is one way to do that. But also maybe get your, if you have homeroom parents, get them involved in that as well. And so making sure that they are in contact with the parents. We have homeroom parents that will actually have a get-together early on in the summer, even before school starts, just so that parents will get to meet each other and the children will get to meet each other, and you can have that start so that even on the first day, it's not totally brand new, especially if there are new families coming into the school. It's good to have a homeroom parent sometimes get a get-together so that they're not coming in without knowing anybody or having it be totally unfamiliar. So I think using these four strategies are a good way to form cohesiveness and get that relationship started. So the next clarity, or your outline says clear communication. Clarity is so important. It's critical when working with families. This year, our school had the opportunity to participate in LeaderCast, which actually is beamed from here in Atlanta. It's a one-day leadership conference, and we heard, first up was Andy Stanley, who is an author and a pastor, written many books. He spoke about the clarity of leadership. He said that no matter how good the subject matter or how important it is, if the clarity is not apparent, no one will follow. That we value integrity, but we follow clarity. Let me say that again. We value integrity, but we follow clarity. Clarity is magnetic, it's powerful, and it results in influence. So clarity is, it's almost more, it's not more important than subject matter integrity, but it just, it fits in there so well. If you're not clearly communicating, it's not going to come across, and you're not going to have that relationship. Parents are busy, and as parents, we understand that. Our days are full as well. They need an easy way to be able to quickly see and understand what's going on in their child's day and in the classroom. Frequent class emails are a good way to do that. I love emailing. I can tend to be too wordy, though, so I have to be really careful to be succinct. And to cut it down to what really needs to get across, but it's easy for me to just sort of write on and on about what we're learning about and what our day was like and how great the class is doing. And I think that's good to give some heads up and let parents know that this is what we're doing and this is what we learned about this week and this is coming up next week. And if anybody would like to contribute or help, or just giving them that information. I've had so many parents email me back or even catch me in the hall or call me and just say, Jenny, thank you for that email, because it really did help me know what was going on. Because, you know, sometimes when second graders come home and parents ask them how their day was and what's going on, they may not hear the whole story, or they may hear a totally different story. And so sometimes I tell parents, especially when we're talking about prayer requests, I'll say, I won't tell you everything that goes on in the class if I don't hear it. You know, if you're well, that's actually not what I say, but we have an agreement that I won't say something. Sorry, I'm getting off track there. But so let's get back to the outline. So make sure all parents are on board with email, though, if you're going to use that. A couple years ago, I had a family that had decided to just opt out of computer usage, and they weren't getting any email. And I didn't know that until the middle of the year, when I figured out that they hadn't been getting any of the notices. So in this day and age, in this time, most people do have email capability, but just double check that if you're going to choose that as your main way of communicating. Phone calls can be good. I think that's more if something immediate happens, if you are having a concern or an issue, if something happened during the day that you really feel like parents should know that day. A quick phone call after school is a good way to do that. And then texting. So I just put that in there just because it's become much more popular recently, and I wouldn't necessarily give your cell phone number out to the class. I mean, if that's something that you feel comfortable doing, I think that's fine. But I think if you have parents, you know, calling or texting you late at night, there needs to sort of be a cutoff time where you have your private time with your family and you can get back to them in the morning. But a couple years ago, I had three students that all had EpiPens and that had anaphylactic shock issues. And actually, I had seven students with severe food allergies, and three of them needed immediate care or had that option to have immediate care. So I gave those parents my cell phone number, and we were able to text one day when we had a reaction. And it did help to have that immediate availability. So just use your best judgment on that, I think. Sometimes it's just more appropriate to communicate by email or by phone sometimes. But texting, reserve it as an option if you think there's a situation that might call for that. And then one-on-ones. I know this is reversed on your outline, but one-on-ones. So different from a conference, this would just be a chat between a parent and you if there's something that you feel like early on needs to be addressed. So if you're quickly seeing within the first week or two or three of school that there is an issue, there's a problem. There's either a behavioral problem or there's an academic problem. There's a cognitive problem and maybe a learning issue, and you see that right away. And maybe you had the heads up from the teacher on the year before. Don't wait. Let the parent know as soon as you can. Give them a call and say, hey, Johnny is struggling in this area. Could we just meet for 10 minutes after school today? And just let them know that you're available and work it out so that it's convenient for them. But parents are usually happy that you let them know earlier rather than later. If you wait till the first parent-teacher conference, that might not be until October. And maybe by then it's been, you know, 9 or 10 weeks. Sometimes you just don't want to let a problem fester. You want to just jump on it right away. Sometimes things can resolve themselves, on the other hand. So you have to be wise, and you have to just keep an eye on things. But don't, if you feel like it's going to be a problem, I would say don't wait. And then the hallway chats. So sometimes you can catch a parent in the hallway, usually after school. Sometimes what happens is you come in the morning and the parent is ready to catch you in the hallway. And you're ready to head into your classroom and they're standing there, you know, Mrs. Wilford, can I talk to you for just a minute? And you know how just a minute can turn into 5 and 10 and even longer. Or a child is sick and the parent comes in and says, oh, I just want to get Susie's homework, you know, for the day. Can I just quickly grab that? You have to be flexible, but many times the answer to that is, you know, I'm prepping for my class right now, and I need to, when we're talking about homework, if a child is sick, I need this time to get ready. Class, the bell's going to ring in 10 or 15 minutes, so I'll pull that together as soon as I can, and I'll email you quickly and let you know when it's ready, or even, you know, you can grab it after school. You can be honest, and I think parents want you to be honest. I mean, you have a job and a calling, and your little charges are right there wanting to talk to you and spend time with you, so it's sort of walking that fine line between being available and accessible and wanting to share your heart with the parents and give them good feedback and all, but also you've got your class waiting and ready for you. So a hallway chat needs to be short, it needs to be succinct, and it can be done. A lot of times the better time for that is after school. My office hours are right after school for an hour. So I am always available at that time to talk to parents, either in the classroom, in the hallway, in a conference room if that's necessary. So just, again, your best judgment is the best way to go. But don't let parents railroad you, I mean, into spending, you know, time disproportionately with them. You want to be able to make sure that you are putting your class first and, of course, you know, letting them know that you want to help, but maybe catch me after school, or let's set a time for that. Let's make an appointment because this is important and I want to give this my focus. And so giving them that reason so that you're not letting your time be encroached upon so that you can continue on with your day. So sort of, and again, going along with that, be quick to identify those that might squander or inappropriately use your time. So again, just wisdom on that. And then also, if you do, on the going back just quickly, well, to the one-on-one, but also then going on to referrals. If you are in a one-on-one with a parent and you realize that this might be a bigger problem than you know, you might want to then have some referrals in your back pocket. Talk with your administration ahead of time. Square that with them. Know where the best place is to refer a child on if there are significant problems. If you know ahead of time, there might be some learning issues. Know of some businesses, learning centers, tutoring center, maybe an in-house program that you have. Have that ready so that you can say, you know, I think this might be a good time to think about this, even early on. If you can already tell that there are some issues going on, don't be afraid to be upfront with the parents. But talk with your administration ahead of time so that you know what you're saying to them and what the appropriate place is then to refer them on. Okay, then conferences. So this is the biggie. So how can we effectively and appropriately use this time? First of all, enjoy this time. Don't be afraid of it. Don't fear it. Don't be resentful of it. We all know it is a long day. It is a tough day. It's just a different day than dealing with your students all day. But this is the time when you find out, especially that first conference, you find out, you realize, aha, that's why little Sarah is the way she is, because here's mom and here's dad, and now I know. So it's a way to quickly make those assessments and to quickly figure out, maybe if whatever is going on with the child, now I have a little better idea of why. So start off by praying if you feel like that's appropriate. I have a lot of pastors' kids in my class, and they will come in and want to pray first. That's great. If parents would like to pray first, that's great. I don't feel like you have to do that. If it's your, if that's what you normally do, definitely, it's never a bad idea. And then as you get started, sometimes parents are really eager to speak. Sometimes they want to go first. If they want to go first, I think that's great. And if they're very quiet, sometimes I'll say, it's so good to see you. Thank you for coming. Let's have a seat. And so how do you think the year is going? Give them that lead. Give them that opportunity to start. It's easy to kind of hand them the report card and say, this is how it's going. They're doing really well, but they need a little improvement here. But overall, it's going great. And I think it's nice to let parents come in and have the first word sometimes. Although sometimes they're very eager to hear from you, because really what they're all about is hearing what you think about their child. That's what's important to them. So, again, best judgment. You've done it for a long time, and I know I'm sort of preaching to the choir here, but I just wanted to kind of put this all into one place so that you would maybe take away a nugget of truth today. Next, direct the conference. Lead it. You want to not let it get away from you. Parents, I love having them talk first, but I think that this is your time to communicate to them how their child is doing, what their academic success is, if there are any deficiencies, if there are any weaknesses. And again, I would say kind of do that in a good, bad, good format. If you do have something negative to say, don't lead with it. Start out by telling the parent how much you enjoy having their child in your class, what you've learned from them, what you appreciate about them, And there's always something, right? Even if it's a difficult child, there's always something that you can say that's positive. And if you start with that, it relaxes their parents. And then I think they're willing to be more open and honest with you as well. So be affirming. And then listen more than you talk. And in that sense, I mean, listening, sort of with that metacognitive, at that metacognitive level. So as they're talking, thinking about what are they saying and how should I respond? And I even usually praying while I'm having a conference, Lord, give me wisdom, give me guidance on how I should approach this parent, especially if it's a difficult one. And then to use the think method, and I stole this from another teacher, and teachers are usually generous thieves. They like to give, but they do take from each other. And so think stands for what we should do when we are speaking. And this goes for, we teach our students this as well. So when you think, when you're talking, you're saying, is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary? And is it kind? Is it true? Is it helpful? Is it inspiring? Is it necessary? And is it kind? So sometimes there are those negative things that you need to bring up in a conference. Usually the negatives are necessary and helpful, and they can be, and they usually are true. They can be kind. They're not always inspiring, but you never know. So I think that method is a great way as you're speaking. And then do commiserate if you can. If you are a parent yourself, you have been in their shoes. You know what they're going through. So you can approach that in letting them know that, hey, I understand. I myself have had kids go all the way through kindergarten through 12th grade and beyond. So I have a perspective in which I can share with them, you know what, my daughter did the same thing in second grade or had the same problem. And so I can work with them coming from that same perspective, and it does make a difference. And then sometimes you have to put on your counseling hat as well. You all know that sometimes when a parent comes in, they're really looking for maybe needing some help in some parenting skill areas, not just help with how do I help my child with their homework. So be wise and give that if it's appropriate. And have some examples and some strategies to help them. So if Johnny is having a problem with literature questions, have an example of an excellent copy of literature question answers to show him or to show the parents. Of course, black out the name and the date, make a copy, and just say, you know, this is kind of what we're looking for. So if he's struggling in this area, you can take this home and share it with him, and then you guys kind of work towards this excellent example. In the same way in strategies, if they're struggling with math facts, if they don't know their times tables and they need help there, give them some options. You know, there's this really great handheld game called The Learning Shark, and it's over, or The Math Shark, and it's at the learning store across the street, and you can pick it up for this price. And just give them some examples of things that they can use if they're students are, they come in and they say, oh, they're so bored with flashcards, they don't want to do them anymore. Have some good strategies to give them. And then lastly, auditing. So if you know that your parent-teacher conference is sort of going, may go awry, if you know you have some parents that are unhappy, if you know that maybe it is not going to be a completely positive experience, do not hesitate to let your principal or your administration know. They will be happy to come in and sit with you, or even another teacher if that's appropriate. It's just a good idea to have them on board and let them know if you think there might be a problem. We also do what we call the pop-in. So sometimes we'll start the conference, and if I know it's not going to be an easy one, I'll tell my principal, hey, Carl, could you come and pop in during this 10:20 to 10:40 time? And he will, and he'll come in and just say, hi, everyone, I'm just auditing some conferences today. Do you mind if I just sit in on this one for just a few minutes? And if there's any tension, it kind of diffuses everything, and it helps everybody just kind of stay on an even keel. So don't be worried or afraid to do that, or make it, or don't feel like it makes you seem like you don't, you know, you can't handle it. That's not really what it is. I think giving each other help and support is what it's all about. Okay, but what if? So I'm going to read it to you. I don't know if you can see it, but this is a parent-teacher conference. And the dad says, well, if my son does have a belligerent attitude, then he must have picked it up here at school, as he stands with his arms crossed in his stance. Okay? And what if, so it's hard to see, but I liked this image of in 1969 at the parent-teacher conference, the parents are asking Johnny, what about these grades? And then today, they're looking at the teacher in that same way, saying, explain these bad grades. Or what if unruly, talking back, lack of respect, and that's just the parents? We've had those conversations before. So collisions. What if we run into problems? It's going to happen. I probably should have said when we run into problems. Breathe, pray, and ask. There are many situations when you will find yourself in a conference not knowing exactly how to respond. True story. I remember parents telling me that their child's poor scores were directly related to the fact that I hadn't told the class that Krispy Kreme was offering donuts for grades ahead of time. You need to be prepared for some unusual responses and situations. But mostly, people just want to be heard. You do need to put on that advising, counseling, mentoring hat, though, because especially in a difficult conference, when a child has either behaved poorly or has poor grades or there is a problem in some way, it's important to have that ability. So as teachers, we know we wear many hats all day long, especially in the lower grammar. We are sort of a surrogate mother figure in a lot of ways, and we are putting those Band-Aids on and helping tie those shoes and helping with those water bottles and all of those different things. So as parents come in, especially parents that are younger parents, parents that this is their oldest child, first-time parents, they may need a lot of parenting skill help, even more than anything else. So be willing and open to do that. And then don't wait. If there's a problem, again, beating around the bush just wastes everybody's time. So if you can see that there's something, don't be afraid to address it. I mean, you know, maybe not on the first day, but as the year gets in going, I mean, if you can see that there is an issue, just be real and communicate that with parents. I think they are wanting you to do that, and they want to know mostly what the reality is and what you're seeing in the classroom. It is difficult to tell a parent that their child is lacking. But I think as you draw from your own life experiences and circumstances, and if you're real with them, and that's what I said on this last one, being transparent with them, with humility, I think that's important. God is very gracious with his wisdom. And with much prayer and by reading a lot of the Proverbs, I've been able to personally apply some of these ways in talking with parents. We learn many verses in our school in second grade, but one of the first ones we learn is Proverbs 3:5-6. trust in the Lord with all your heart. And we do motions. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He shall direct your paths. We talk about how they direct planes on the runway. This is what God is doing in our lives. So using that biblical truth to help you have wisdom as you talk to parents is really a good way to go. You know that some parents will need more hand-holding than others. That's okay. Some are younger, some are newer, some are more hesitant. Be willing to do that for them as long as it's not disproportionately taking time away from other parents. But I have found in my classroom time that the more time and more energy that I pour into these kids and pour into their parents in the form of spending time to form that relationship, it comes back to me exponentially, because typically a lot of times they'll have younger siblings that will pass through my class, and it's so nice. You know, it's so great to have those returning families that you already have formed that connection with and that bond with, and you can say, hey, it's so great to see you. I get to have, you know, your littlest one in my class this year. I'm so looking forward to it. And let's say, well, so-and-so's not like the older one. And I'll say, you know, that's okay. That's great. It wouldn't be awesome if they weren't. I'm, you know, hoping for that difference and looking forward to getting to know them. It's worth it to give of your time and invest of your time and energy to form that bond and relationship with the parents. God's grace is sufficient. God can use you to model temperance, even in a situation like a parent-teacher conference. And to that end, just one last note on collisions. Sometimes a conference can turn a little ugly. Sometimes parents can get a little heated and things might be said. And I would just say, don't accept an insult or an attack. If it happens, I would just, again, breathe, pray, and definitely don't meet with those parents again without your administration with you. It rarely happens. But if it does, just know that it would be best to sort of have a team on board and make sure that your administration knows that it happened. And again, I think it's talking about communication, so important for us as teachers to have a close have close communication with our administration and our principals and the people that we are working with, so that when these things happen, and they will sometimes, they are already aware and they can support you and in that way support the parents. And of course, I know you wouldn't, but you would never retaliate in kind if something like that happened, and always working on self-control, and we talk about the fruits of the Spirit in our class too, so that's a big deal. Okay, we're almost done, and it's almost lunchtime, so hang in there just a little bit longer. So just some conclusions. So in communication, we've got three main areas: cohesiveness, clarity, and conferences. So continue, though, to encourage cohesiveness and clarity through parental involvement throughout the year. So don't drop the ball after September. We're all gung-ho to get started again after the rejuvenation of summer, but it's easy to kind of, once the year gets started and we've sent out all that email and information, now we're in our classroom bubble, and we are working hard, and we are grading papers, and we are spending time, and we are tired at the end of the day. But continue to form that cohesive bond. Be in touch. Keep your finger on the pulse of the classroom. Know what's going on. Do that through your homeroom parents. Do that through maybe a parent that you've had a relationship with from the year before or 2 years before. Don't let it slip. Keep communicating with them. I'd like to send a weekly email out. Not always, but I try. Be available, especially to the HRPs, the homeroom parents. And then, again, don't be afraid or reticent to ask for help. If you need some help from another teacher, if you need an idea, if you need some encouragement, if you need some support from your principal or your admin, don't wait to do that. Let them know right away. Just say, hey, could you help me on this? I need an idea. Other teachers especially are willing and wanting, longing to share their experiences with you. They want to help you. They've got ideas. They've maybe been in the classroom longer than you have, and they are right there wanting to help you. So don't forget to ask your colleagues for help, because they want to. They're ready. And then, of course, keeping God at the center of everything, every relationship. He's the one to whom you're going to look for your strength and your wisdom, always. And then, again, remembering that parents are people, too. We're working together. They just want to know. Their longing, their heart is they just want to know that their child is going to be okay, that they are going to make it through, that they are going to get through whatever this difficulty is, and that they are going to they're going to survive grammar school, and that they are going to thrive. So, and then as we work together to nurture a child's heart towards God, He is faithful, always faithful, to be there guiding us and helping us. So that's all I have. We're just about at the end of the time, but I guess we probably have maybe just a couple minutes for questions if anybody has one. So thank you very much. Yes, in the back. Absolutely. I have had that pit in my stomach, that nervous feeling several times when a parent comes up and says, hey, I want to talk to you, but I don't have time to tell you right now, so let's just meet. I think if it's a child that you have had a problem with, or if you know that there was a problem last year, I would, if you can, during the day, try to touch base maybe with that other teacher and check with them. Otherwise, it is a difficult thing. Personally, I would just say some prayers during the day and just ask God for self-control and wisdom. But I think if you could chat with somebody who maybe knew the child, or knew of maybe a potential carryover problem from the year before, that would be a good idea. But otherwise. And I was in that same exact situation this year. I just had to pray. And then when they came in, it was totally not what I was expecting either. So, again, being flexible, being willing to say, I haven't seen that, or I haven't thought about that, or I think maybe just touch it briefly on the surface, and then maybe say, let me get back to you on that, because I want to go back and look at their work, or I want to think about that and pray about that. And I think, again, being transparent and honest is never a bad way to go when you're talking about that. Yes. Yes. So the question is, she has a student coming in that is a delicate snowflake that gets irritated when another child sits next to them, or didn't know that question was going to be on the test. How do you handle that? I was just in Charlotte. I was just in Charlotte Mason workshop, and the very brilliant teacher there said, that's a situation where you just have to tell the parent and the child, well, you're going to learn to be able to sit next to this person, or you're going to learn to be prepared and study for the test and use the study guide that I give you. And I also tell the parents privately, it's second grade, at least in my case. This will not make any difference. They will still get into Harvard if that is their goal. In that, this is the training time. This is the training ground. This is the teaching time. If they have to go to the principal's office, what better time to go than in second grade? Because you don't want them to have to go in sixth grade or in ninth grade when these problems multiply. So I would say to very sweetly and nicely tell the parent that you understand, but that this is how they're going to learn to live in community, by sitting by that person that's maybe a little irritating, and maybe their presence might help the person sitting next to them not be quite so irritating, and maybe that person might learn from them. And that, you know, you're sorry about the question on the test, but that what better time to learn about using a study guide and being prepared than in second grade. So, and again, as sweetly and nicely as you can. So catching more flies with honey is probably, than vinegar, is a good way to think of that. So sometimes even overboard on the sweetness, but you know what I'm saying. Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? Yes. Yes. Right. So, yeah, you know, and I don't know that I've ever actually had the best friend scenario, but I have had good friends who've had their children in my class. And I've had teachers that have had children, that I've had their children in my class. And in fact, I have my administrator's child in my class next year. So, yes, it is a delicate situation sometimes. I would just say that probably drawing those boundary lines soon, and not in a, again, with sweetness and with respect and with an air of collaboration, just letting them know that there will, you know, and you don't even have to say this, you know, word by word, but just in talking to them, and they will see this as you give your you know, orientation, or you send out that first letter, or you have your back to school night. It'll be apparent that when you are in the classroom, you are the teacher, you are the authority, and that it isn't anything, you know, to say that you aren't still friends with the child or with the parents, or that you don't still have that relationship outside of the classroom. But within the classroom, there does have to be a leader. I tell my second graders, you know, somebody has to be in charge, and it's me, and it's not you. So, you know, you wouldn't say that, you know, so much to sixth graders. But letting both your class know, and then letting the parents know that it's not going to affect your relationship, and that you will still be best friends, but that when you are in authority over them, you're not going to give them a pass, or their kids a pass, or you're not going to overlook behavior that should be taken care of. So, did that answer your question? Okay, I think we're just about out of time. So thank you so much for coming. I appreciate it. Have a great lunch and a great rest of the conference. Thank you. Necessary. Yeah, I love that. That was a kindergarten teacher at our school 1 year, like a long time ago. And, but I just have always appreciated that. So, yeah.